You have to have that mindset as a player, but as a human being, you got to know where your slot in life is.
Who's been your favorite superstar to coach?
Oh, there's been so many. My favorite ever to coach I've ever, like, if you're talking superstars, is you got to have a little bit of ass.
Yeah, you have to have that.
No matter who you are, male, female, you got to have a little bit of, like, I know how to do it. I know what to do. Leave me alone at some point. Like, let me do me. Like, I'm that good.
It is your day off, and you've been gracious enough with your time to let us.
I love you both very much. I love you more, but yes, I love you both very much.
That's the easiest decision you've ever made. That's the easiest coaching decision you've ever made.
All right. Well, welcome to yet another episode of Flip Your Friday. I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc. And we have a very special guest today, Case.
Yes, we do.
Assistant basketball coach Dave Velasquez for the men's San Diego State University.
Friend, family, not just any guest.
You know, it's funny you say that. I do want to take a moment because you are the star, but for right, I just get my 10 seconds of fame before we jump right into you. And let me share something with the audience today that not a lot of people have always picked up on, but it's the dynamic between me and Casey that's very important to flesh out. I really take genuine interest in every guest that we have here. I want to know where you're from, what you're about. Casey doesn't care about stuff like that. He cares about leadership. He cares about qualities. He wants to know what wins. He doesn't really care for you as a person or a friend, okay? But now that we got that out, let's get into a little bit about – let's talk a little bit about your journey.
First of all, before we get into Dave, because we're all friends here, you said that was your moment of fame?
That was
it. Well, I never get 10 seconds to talk to you.
Your 10 seconds was throwing Casey under the bus?
No
one can be shocked.
I wanted to elucidate the dynamics of how this podcast works.
Got it. Also, based on that introduction, there's a reason why you don't have 15 minutes of fame. All right, but without further ado, let's get to our talent.
Let's talk a little bit about your journey. Just start. How did you get to becoming an assistant coach? I mean, talk a little bit about your journey. Start from the beginning. How did they choose this career?
I was fortunate. I was very lucky. I knew what I wanted to do at a very young age. You know, when you like grow up and like Casey wanted to be a professional football player, you probably wanted to be a lawyer slash football agent slash a really good receiver at Northwestern, whatever it might be when you were growing up. But when I was in sixth grade, I wanted to be a college basketball coach. That's what I
really
wrote.
At sixth grade.
Well, that's what I wanted to do. My father was a basketball coach.
I was very
fortunate to be around basketball my whole life. I was the youngest of three boys. As the youngest, I was the one that always followed around my dad. My brothers weren't really into it like that, so I was always the one that was around basketball all the time. And I'm not kidding when I said, like, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I would spend my nights at Skyline Junior College rebounding for Jason Kidd.
I was going to say, what level was your father coaching at? JC level?
It was a JC level. When I was younger, it was at the University of San Francisco.
Yep.
Before that, when I was younger, he was actually coaching for the San Jose Jammers.
Yeah, the Jammers.
Yeah, so the CBAs.
That now, was at San Jose State. Wouldn't they play at San Jose State?
It's weird, the San Jose State connection in this room right now.
Yeah.
They played at the same gym that they play in now. I think the locker rooms are the same that they still are now.
That's actually where Bellarmine won their first CCS title ever in the history of Bellarmine. I was actually on that team.
Is that right?
But that's where we played.
I won a CCS title in high school.
The worst in the world. Enough about you.
That's pretty amazing that, you know, we had Jeff Garcia, the quarterback for the Niners, on, and he talked a little bit about the impact that his father had in steering his career as not only a professional football coach, but a father and a player. So it's interesting that your father inspired you to kind of take this career, and you saw it early on in sixth grade. Often I've dealt with players before where later on, after they're done playing, they want to still have an affiliation, a connection to sports. And obviously the natural progression is coaching, but this is something unique. You knew this as a child.
Well, let's ask a question about that. I had the unique experience of running through the last year's tournament, which we're going to get into with your dad all the way throughout. And it was really interesting. And I got his perspective on it. What are some of the things that a coach's son, what do you take away from watching your father be a coach? What are some of the things that you say today, I am this way because of my father?
Well, it starts with the amount of time in a gym. Like, it's as silly as it sounds. Like, you have to be like, okay with like, your day is spent between four walls and a basketball floor, two hoops. You know, is hopefully it, more. But it's like you have to be okay with like the ball bouncing has got to give you joy. Like you have to like that's got to be your happy place. And like for me as a child, I'll just like that's what made me happy. Whether it was me shooting or rebounding for someone else, rebounding for my dad's players, rebounding for, you know, he had this guy named, his name was Cell Phone Merv. He's like this legendary guy from Oakland that who had all like the greatest players from Oakland. And I was just his like little kid that I just got taken around, and when I get in trouble, like I'd go stay at Cell Phone Merv's house in Oakland. My dad's like, you're either gonna go to juvenile hall or you're gonna go stay with Cell Phone Merv. Like that's where I would go when I got in trouble. And like, and honestly for me it's like I don't know where this came from. I think it's because I got my butt whooped by my brother so much in life and sports and really just in anything we did. That my oldest brother's 6 years older, the other one's 3 years older. I never had that like inflated view of self in sports. In life I still do. But in sports, I never did. Like, I never thought I was ever going to play in the NBA. I actually always thought Division I basketball would be, like, the pinnacle of, like, if I work so hard every single day of my life, I might be able to get to that. Like, that would be the best.
So, where do you distinguish humility? Because it sounds like there's a distinction here between humility and confidence that has to get you to where you right?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just, like, not in it's one of the things that drives me crazy, but about people in like an adult world, but I want our players to have it like an inflated view of self. I just think it's a real thing. Like every player needs to walk around like you're the best player in the world. Like if they were to play LeBron, like I can lock him up. I'm better than him. You have to have that mindset as a player, but as a human being, you got to know where your slot in life is.
So the genesis of this podcast, which you and I have talked about offline, but the genesis is really about finding elite people and what they're doing and then just diving in, peeling the onion back and trying to get an understanding as to what makes them different or unique.
Yeah.
We've touched on this subject hundreds of times in this podcast is the idea of confidence. And what do you, whether it's yourself or a player, how do you look at that and how do you get somebody who has had a challenge with confidence and get them to see the light? Let's first start with you because we want to dive in. A lot of people that are going to watch this want to understand you, but also some of your teachings.
Well, understanding you is how you coach.
Hey, coach, I'll get my own question out. I don't need your help.
I'm agreeing.
So let's talk about you first. Yeah. When you get to a point where you're like, it's almost like imposter syndrome where you're like, am I in the right spot? Somebody else could do this better than me. And we've all been there. How do you take your own teachings and trainings with confidence, and how do you like look at that?
I don't know. I think that's when coaches fall on their face. I don't know. I think you got to approach every game every day the same way.
Have you been in a place where you're like, man, my confidence is shook right now?
Yeah, I have.
So how do you get out of that?
You get out of it by just it's trust. It's preparation. Again, it's coaching. So it's like, a lot of it, it's like you have to have a little bit of a you can't make the shot form mentality too. But it's a preparation thing, and a lot of it comes down to it's a recruiting thing too. You know, it's a time and effort and energy that you have to put into your craft, whatever it might be. And but to the second part of your question about your guys and getting them out of it, I think that's the magic in coaching. I think it's not overreacting to when guys don't have confidence. I think you understand it's going to take a moment. It's going to take a minute. It's going to have to be, it might take 2 days for one guy. It might take 2 weeks. It might take 2 months. But you have to have some type of plan to get him out of it. We're actually dealing with it with one of our guys right now. And the plan right now is let's do the same exact thing that we were doing in the summer when you felt so good about yourself. Let's go back to that workout that we were doing in the summer and let's do it over and over and over and over again the rest of the season, and let's not change it up ever again. So let's just go back. When you were feeling your best was in the summer. So let's go do that summer workout over and over. And if you don't, but I know one thing, if you at some point are going to get back to having that feeling over this period of time, it might take a week, it might take 2 weeks, like I said, but we expect to have a longer period of the season coming up, the most important part of the season. Let's have you playing your best basketball, have you the most confident at this time. So again, you got to have a plan for the players to have them feeling most confident. But every human being's different. And that's the magic in coaching really is that, is to treat them all different. You can't treat them equally. You have to just treat them fair. It's Steve Fisher's most famous line I ever learned. And where we grew up and we played in this, you know, that WCAL and this, you know, it's this league of super competitive, whatever sport you play, incredible coaching, great teachers. You know, it's the best of the best in Northern California. But it kind of is like everybody wears the same shoes. You know, everybody has to look the same. Like, everybody gets treated equal. I got to San Diego State, and I'll never forget the first meeting that I had with Coach Fisher, 18 years old. His first team meeting was, everybody in this room is going to be treated fair, and not anybody's going to be treated equal. Which meant to me, hey, Dave in the back, you ain't getting treated the same as the guy that's scoring 30 for us.
Doesn't that speak, and this is something I want to get to, and I can't wait to talk about your road to the Final Four, because that was just fantastic, and thank you for allowing me to share part of it. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about, you've talked about confidence. What about culture? How do you foster winning culture? Because I think that's a big deal, and I think it is recognizing and tailoring it to whatever specific team you have in the building at that moment. Is there some pointers that
I completely disagree with that. Oh. It's not the team you have in that moment. Huh. Your culture is what your culture is. It's your standard. It's what you believe is excellence. It's what you believe that you're going to do every single day. I think it's the most overused word in sports. I don't want to go on a whole thing. Yeah. And business. Mm-hmm. But if whatever your standard is, with your team that goes to a Final Four, or the team the year before that blows a lead against Creighton in the first round of the tournament, our culture was the same.
But
that culture that you have of a standard of, you're going to wake up every single morning, you're going to get an individual workout in, you're going to make sure that every single thing that you do and say is for San Diego State basketball, and then that you're going to believe that if you do those two things, that the self-recognition and what you're going to get for yourself is going to come with everybody's boat rises when San Diego State basketball wins. If you believe in that, that's your culture.
That's your culture.
Okay. And that's the standard.
Then where's the role of magic then? If it's that simple, where's the magic?
That is the magic.
I'm just asking.
No. Yeah. It's not simple.
It's impossible.
Well, him becoming the head assistant at San Diego State isn't simple, right? It's 22 years of work now is being recognized.
And looks like it just happened.
On a national level. It's Dave Velasquez is running the number one defense in the whole country. Oh, that just happened. No,
it started when he was in sixth grade.
Yeah, 22 years. Yeah. Right? And culture doesn't pivot. Like, let's just say you have a bad culture. You can't just say, oh, shit, we have a bad culture, I got to change it. No, this is a process. It's like steering a cruise ship, right? Yeah. You're not going to pivot on a dime, do a 90.
Do you have your own definition of what culture would be, just off the tip or no?
It doesn't matter what it says in the dictionary.
Not dictionary. Right? I'm asking your personal.
For business or for people, right? Like you're recruiting to culture, right? It's an energy and an attitude. And it also goes to this point of like, you get what you tolerate.
Sure.
So if you start to tolerate behavior, right? Like this is what happens in business is oftentimes you tolerate behavior of production, right? You have a salesperson that has a terrible attitude. And because they produce so much, you tolerate it. You bend the rules to accommodate for numbers. You have a superstar player where you have to take their 25 points a game, when in reality, if you had a guy making 12 points, but he was playing really good defense, the culture would be a lot better. So you have to think about it. It has to be very intentional. And when, you know, maybe you could touch on
it. Yeah, but I will say this. There also has to come to a point, and you're the best at this of any businessman I know. You don't ever cut off your nose in spite of your face, though, right? If that person's really killing it at that level, you don't have to adjust or change your culture, but you just have to make sure the culture is not affected by that person being able to be the best version of themselves by being who they are, as long as it's not affecting everyone else.
Yes.
And I think that's the hardest thing, and I think it's the magic of San Diego State that we've had over the years. Yep. And not every guy's an angel. No, they're not. Yeah. And it's dealing with the human beings, and sometimes your best players are your hardest guys to fit into that culture, but it's everyone else around them that is the culture that makes those guys.
Well, because ego, confidence, and all of that production
at a high level.
Well, and also too, like the notoriety of being a superstar and the ego of an 18 to 20 year old, you know, male that's a superstar and scoring 25 points. Like that all goes, it all fits into the culture because you have to have superstars to actually be good. You have to have revenue and salespeople that produce.
Who's been your favorite superstar to coach?
Oh, there's been so many.
Give me one. Give me two.
I mean, my favorite ever to coach I've ever, like, if you're talking superstars, there's two of them. The guy that my first original superstar I loved to coach was Jamal Franklin. And he might have been the one of the most, what other people might say, uncoachable guys. He was so coachable to me because I knew where his heart was. I knew all he wanted to do was win. It was just he had to do it in his own way. It looked awkward. It looked unique. But he's an NBA draft pick, and he just had to mature. He had to grow up where he came from, his background. It wasn't his
fault. Did you help foster that part?
Yes, absolutely. That's where he's the closest I am with any player I've ever coached is him. It's his foundation of where he grew up. It wasn't his fault. You know, it's not what you get at 18 years old, and we say this a lot in our recruiting meetings. We sit on couches. We tell them, we're not trying to change. You're not going to change an 18-year-old. You're just going to try to help them on the path that their family got them to this point at, right? But there's also the ones that you're hoping you could really help them become. They're at this part of the,
you can see a way crazier
yeah. version of themselves. And it's not their fault they're starting here, but we can get them here. There's others that you're just like, let's just keep them on this awesome path. And to me, he's the one. The other one I love the best is Malachi Flynn was coming. He was an all Pac-12 player when he transferred, right? They had all these people flying into Pullman, Washington to recruit him as a transfer. And when I went and met with them, I'll never forget, I met him at a Starbucks in Pullman, Washington. And I sat down with him. I said, how many coaches have been here? How many head coaches? He started rattling them all. I said, okay. I said, what do they come here and say? I could do this. I could do that. I said, has any of them told you can't get through a ball screen? Like, you can't defend a ball screen. And then I showed him what Chris Paul looks like. One of the only guys that, like, his, like, size in the NBA. I said, watch Chris Paul on a ball screen. This is what, if you really want to play in the NBA, you're not on one NBA draft board. You're all Pac-12 this. If you really want to make it in the NBA, you're going to have to be, get through a ball screen. As simple as that sounds, you're getting killed on this ball screen. I showed him just getting killed by his kind of Peyton Pritchard, who still plays for Boston. I said, he is destroying you. If you come to San Diego State, I promise you this. You can do everything you can do on offense. We might not even, all we're going to do is let you do you. You can be you. But on defense, you're going to become the best version of yourself. And I'll never forget, his mom called me and said, are you coming to Seattle tonight? And I said, I wasn't planning on it. She's like, well, Malachi just called me and said he wants to play at San Diego State. Is there any way you can come to the house? And I was like,
yes, I can.
I can change the plans. And honestly, he came to San Diego State. He was Mount West Defensive Player of the Year in the 1 year he played at San Diego State, and he got drafted in the NBA in the first round. Those two guys, to me, are the two that are like those. And again, one of them was incredibly coachable, Malachi, and he has his moments of every great player I've never met. I don't know if I can use this word. I'm assuming I can. Coach Fisher told us this. Coach Dutcher has always been about this. You're never going to be around a great player. You're never going to be around a great business person or a great athlete that you've had. That's not a little bit of asshole. You got to have a little bit of asshole.
Yeah, you have to have that.
No matter who you are, male, female, you got to have a little bit of like, I know how to do it. I know what to do. Leave me alone at some points. Like, let me do me. Like, so I'm that true. Good.
No. We're not getting off of this subject. There's a lot more.
Yeah, because it comes in recruiting.
Yeah. But to me, that level of dealing with those guys individually is what makes coaching.
We could jump into that subject, but I think culture and recruiting, they play in together, right?
I just want to talk how NILs have affected recruiting.
No. That's a way different subject. Okay. Yeah, we could stay on this for a little bit. I love the idea of you're taking two players that really you had a close impact in, but I like the idea of when you're recruiting, you have to recruit a little bit differently because you guys are trying to get big-time athletes at the top programs that are, you know, making a lot of money. But when you're talking about recruiting and culture, what are some of those meetings that people don't get to see that you guys are – it's coaches only. How are you guys talking or discussing that in regards to all the different things that are challenges of recruiting in today's landscape?
It's hard. I mean, high school kids, you have such less data now, and you're not on the road as much. You know, you're not out there as much just because.
Why of is that?
The transfer portal. Just to be honest, just the way things have adjusted, and just in terms of how recruiting works. You know, I think the way staff dynamics. You know, I was thinking about this earlier today. I mean, when I was young, my first 3 years, 4 years on staff, you got to think I was the youngest on staff. I was rarely at practice. We had the other two assistants ahead of me were Justin Hudson, who's a 6 years now as the head coach of Fresno State, Brian Dutcher, who's now seventh year head coach of San Diego State, and Steve Fisher, whose name is on the court at San Diego State. You think I was going to get a word in at practice? So my worth was being on the road and recruiting and being at every high school game possible from here to Chicago to Seattle to Arizona. And also getting who is Dave Velasquez? I didn't have a name. I was not a guy that was like, I didn't come from the NBA or had a great college career. Like, I had to get my name out there. So that was my way of getting to know people, being in the basketball networking recruiting. So when they knew who Dave Velasquez at San Diego State was as a name, Dave from San Diego State, but not who I was. And so spend time with people. That was what I did my first few years. Nowadays, like, there's just that kind of, you know, I hate to use this word, but like kind of like a recruiting like missionary, like that's the, those guys don't exist anymore. Don't exist. Like you're now it's like you have to recruit your own team every year so much that like if you had a recruit a coach that's not there all the time and he's gonna bring in a kid, but then that kid's gonna get there and then he's not gonna be around, that kid's gonna be like, whoa, wait, the guy that recruited me is not here when I'm here.
Sure.
So I'm out. So now I'm going to go somewhere that I'm going to go to his program that the guy that's recruiting me is actually going to be there. So it's really hard for coaches to leave practice and not be around for your own team.
Do you see that changing or continuing?
Continuing. Absolutely. I think it will continue. I think this is obviously it's all new world. Everything's going to be – it's the Supreme Court is going to tell us what world we're going to live in over the next 5 to 10 years here. And it's literally on this, which is wild, but it's really on the Supreme Court to decide.
Well, it's interesting because college sports in general has become business.
Absolutely.
And so in my world, this has been going on for 100 years. You guys are just getting a taste of it over the last 2 years.
Just because, acknowledging it.
Well, yeah. And it's more maybe out in the into the media. Yeah, yeah. And now coaches have to acknowledge that you have to be there for your team. You're recruiting your team first, yes. Right? And we've been in the business world recruiting our team forever. We've always looked at it from the standpoint of if you're not taking care of your people, they're going to leave because they're always being recruited. It used to be illegal to recruit San Diego State basketball.
Right? Yeah.
Right. So it used to be off limits, and now it's not. Now it's encouraged. And so it is a different world. The world is going to continue down this path. There may be some guardrails as to how it's going to be done that will be implemented over the next couple of years. But when you guys are in recruiting meetings and trying to build a culture, how do you guys set your – how do you guys set your wish list? How do you guys look at in the new world, in the new landscape? You're building your board.
So you're talking about pinpointing a player.
Well, I'm just curious. Like, I don't know how it works, especially for basketball. You guys, it's now end of February. You guys are looking at
the, we are working.
You guys are working.
We're working. We already know.
That's what I'm saying, right?
It doesn't ever stop.
Well, it's interesting because you're right at the point of Mountain West tournament. Right at the NCAA tournament, but you guys are still looking
and you have to realize there's only 80 to 90 teams, I think they're playing in 2 weeks.
Right.
There's 250 to 260 that are
they're
like
thirsty.
That are like, oh, our season's done, and that means that there's 250 to 260 times 12 players each on those teams that are like, we're gonna look to maybe go in a different direction, maybe or not. You don't know.
How much of an advantage is it to? I remember particularly in football.
Will you let him answer the fucking question?
He is answering.
You get so anxious, and then you start talking fast. It makes me nervous for you.
Hey, just because
your question's gonna suck. Let him answer the good question before we have to let you
he
talk.
He just finished answering the question.
No, he didn't.
Oh my god. Okay,
we're talking about building the board and recruiting, and you jump in because you get this little idea in your head. You're so excited.
Okay.
Yeah. All can you let the talent talk?
I'm sorry.
I'm tired of hearing from you.
I'm just going to leave.
This is, take a nap.
My God.
So back to that. You have all these people that are, people do reach out. Again, it's not tampering. People reach out and it's usually random, right?
When you say reach out, you're talking about a kid reaching
out? No, never a kid. Okay. It's never a kid. It's never the dad. It's like, for an example, it could be a former player of ours' dad who knows the dad of a player.
Okay.
Hey, so-and-so reached out to me. Check him out and then let me know. And you're like, hey, we can't
talk. So that really is how it works.
That's how it works. But you don't say anything. You can't say anything. But you do put him on the board. Like, the name goes on the board.
He exists.
But you're watching film, and then it goes on the board.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah.
Or you know who it is more than likely.
No, you really don't.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you don't. I mean, there's 1,600 transfers.
That's what I'm saying. There's so many
global
guys.
Global, too. This is a global sport.
How many guys are on your quote-unquote board right now?
For San Diego, for like right now, like 40.
40 for just next year.
How many people are on the roster? Well,
how many will be like, how many players will we actually watch in the transfer portal?
Yeah.
Like when it's all said and done, over 200.
Okay. And then for how many spots?
4 or 5.
And how many, so you have 200 narrowed down to really 40 for 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And then how many do you offer?
Oh, 10.
And I've always wondered this. Especially
a lot of it comes down to now, though, and this is the part you want to get to. A lot of it comes to now is.
Is this where I stay quiet?
Yeah. No, this is where you get excited. This is when This is when, all right, let's just fast forward. Let's get away from where we are in time, okay, in time and place. Let's fast forward to when the portal opens, the day after Selection Sunday. Let's fast forward there. This is when the Wynn Silverman, of that kid you've been watching, right? And you're like, I really want that kid. Okay, he's in. We're going to call him, and we're going to reach out to him. And that's Monday morning, whatever that is. Okay, we call him. That night, he gets a call from his agent. And his agent then reaches out to us and goes, hey, so-and-so, Casey, said that you guys are really interested. Well, he really wants you guys, too. I just want to give you a heads up. His number's 275. What do you have?
So is the 275 a bag of cash?
No.
Is it divided by however many years of eligibility?
I don't even know.
Yeah, okay. So that's what I wanted to get to. Because
is this no... in shekels? Is this in dollars?
There is that's nothing.
This is how he counts.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, shekels. Yeah, again. It's in his world, it's called IOUs.
Can you go back to the jokes we make on like the roof or stuff? Like, you wouldn't even say the shekels roof on the roof.
He's nervous.
Yeah, he made him nervous.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so the 275 is very unknown. Okay, yeah. Got it. But you're...
We've never dealt with it. I will say this. At San Diego State, this year will be the first year. We have never had to deal with the transfer that asked, because we didn't have it or wanted to deal with it, to be honest, last year. Like, we were coming off a Final Four run. We're so late to the game in these transfers. And it was like, do you want to come play for a national championship program? Do you want to go back to a final? Like, we were going to be really, really good again. Not to say that we spoke it in fruition. We have guys that are studs. But we knew we were going to be good again. Like, do you want to come play here or not? Like, we're not going to deal with this nonsense. We have money for you. We have a great collective. We are set up. We're in San Diego. If you can't make money in San Diego and you can have a marketing agent and all these things, figure it out. Figure it out. Seriously. We're not going to get into these numbers games. And we didn't with anybody. But this year,
you're going to have to.
I think you're going to have to, because that is the new world of college sports, period. Yeah. And nobody knows what's true.
Right.
There's no truth to any of this.
Because there's no rules.
There's no rules. But there's also no disclosures. Everything in your world of professional sports, of being an agent, there's disclosure. You have to tell the other team what you paid for this guy. You actually have to tell them you recruited him.
Wait. So if you take a guy from Miami, you have to tell the team how much
you don't have to tell them anything.
You don't have to.
So the average is probably somewhere around 20 to 50?
No. Oh, what level are you talking?
I'm talking about like the 80 schools that are going to play in the tournament.
Okay, the 80 schools that play in the NCAA tournament, I would say the average is... I would say that's a really good... No, you can't even say that because...
Probably less?
There's less than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's $2,000 a month to $10,000 a month is the average.
I would say that's average.
Somewhere around there.
That makes a lot of sense.
Is the reality, which is actually a reasonable fucking number.
That makes a lot of sense.
For what those kids are bringing into schools, et cetera. I think the media will hype up a number. But again, like you said, 99.9% of what you're going to read or hear is bullshit.
Yeah, it's such bullshit. I'm so happy that we get to go back. It's such bullshit.
That's the real...
It is true. I mean, even if you look at the pro level, the bottom of a roster, they don't make a lot of money on marketing deals.
No, but the point is the in the pros, that's all public information. And those are real dollars. Those are all contractual dollars that are reported.
Not the marketing dollars.
No, the marketing dollars are all not. But you can see what someone's making, right? You can see what, like...
On the salary. We were talking about marketing dollars, right?
And the other thing about basketball in salary is that those are actual dollars that you're making. You're guaranteed those dollars. Unlike football, where it's like, you see a $100 million contract. That's actually a $25 million contract.
I agree. I was just distinguishing salary versus marketing dollars. I'm seeing this as marketing money.
I got you. Coach Dutcher and I are on this little kind of like... a rampage right now with all the national media, all the guys we have great relationships with, the biggest national media in basketball, to make sure that they find out what are the teams that spent the most in NIL and didn't win that aren't a part of those 80 teams. Because NIL does not equal success. And what are the teams that didn't have it and found a way to win? Because you have to make sure the donors and fans understand what it really means and what it really is. Just make to, and to me, this whole thing with NIL, and you can move forward after this, because I've been the number one guy to say since this all began, 22 years of college basketball, 22 years of San Diego State, still at San Diego State. We still don't fly on private jets. We have everything we need to win. We don't have all the bells and whistles of all the other things people have. That doesn't matter. We have everything we need to win. Would we want more? Great. Yes. But we have everything we need to win. With that being said, With that being said, I think NIL should have been name, image, and likeness, not pay for play. Because when you start to get the pay for play, then it becomes, what is your motivation as a 19, 20-year-old kid that really hasn't done anything? And you're getting $600,000, $500,000. Again, I'm saying a million, but I do know there's a lot of schools, especially the Power Fives, especially in the SEC, especially in that world down south, they're paying these kids $400,000 to $600,000 on average.
Just to come.
Yeah. Just to be there.
Well, here's
what have you done?
So the NIL is interesting because for someone who's a donor at a Division I program.
Yeah, absolutely.
The NIL is something that the college coaches want because that's real tangible money for them to go out and recruit, bring in players, and then there's a whole...
Well, you mentioned collective, too.
There's a collective.
Absolutely. And it is what it is,
But the idea for a donor to then spend money on an NIL, and you have to be kind of creative on how you can get the tax write-off.
Totally.
Then also, too, it's like, hey, wait a minute. I spent $400,000, not me particularly, but for a donor, and this kid sucks.
I can't even imagine how that would feel.
What are you... Well, I mean, because you... So this is an interesting point.
So where are you going in March? Nowhere? And I paid all this money for him?
And he sucks.
And then it goes to you, right? And that is your fault.
Also, too, I want to go to the NCAA tournament.
But my question is, is like...
I want you to, too.
Hold on, because it used to be... Again, you've been at San Diego for 22 years. The last 2 years, you guys have had the extreme success. But now you have to manage basically like a profit and loss. And you also have to manage a basketball team. But what you're managing now, the egos of not just 18-year-old basketball players, you're also managing guys that are ultra successful. Which are getting
worse and worse.
But I'm saying, like, you have to bring in dollars, right?
I am a fundraiser. I'm a fundraiser. I don't manage the other part. I think we have done it so far at a level where the guys are getting what they deserve. Our guys are living comfortably in San Diego. It's an incredibly expensive town.
Yeah.
Our guys, they pay the same gas prices we all pay as adults. We all do well. It is incredibly expensive to live in San Diego. They put 12,000 people in that arena every single night. It is jumping. Every single bar, sports bar, restaurant, it lives off their games on the road or at home. They deserve to be compensated for that, for their name, image, and likeness in some way. So to me, our guys, there is no managing of money. They're just living normal. They're living normal to enough to be able to pay for gas, go buy normal clothes, go have a nice apartment by themselves. They don't have to worry about, like in the old days, like yourself being a Division I athlete, where like it sucked when it was just your scholarship.
Well, you know what was funny? And I was in one of the meetings, and one of the takeaways from it was that a lot of the perception and a lot of the media around NIL is that these kids are living these extravagant lives.
It's so silly, stupid.
But what it was, when the kids got up and started talking about what the money was going to be used for, meaning – we're talking about $3,000 or $5,000, which in today's inflation is almost nothing to a college athlete. I mean, it's a lot to a college athlete, but almost nothing in the real world. Yeah. And what they were talking about doing was they think, like a lot of these players are not from San Diego. They just want their mom and their dad to come and have a hotel and watch them play basketball. We're not talking about like, hey, I need to go fly a private jet to Las Vegas on my off day. Right, like the reality in the Instagram world are two totally different things when you're talking about these dollars and cents.
The one thing,
so
I'm,
true,
right? I'm
so
really,
true.
I'm really concerned
and the impact,
about,
but the impact that these the dollars of these $3,000 to $5,000 a month can have to a college kid who's really driving a lot of money to the NCAA, to the media, and to San Diego State. It's hugely impactful, right? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yep. It is impactful, but. And this maybe can segue to our next thing. I just talked about the restaurants and the sports bars and everything else in the city. The entire community thrives off when San Diego State basketball is good. There's a whole energy to this entire community and
energy
city.
Energy and profit.
And profit. And that, well, it all goes together. Yep. And there's, because there's people that are out and they're all spending money and they want to go do this and they want to go support it. And so for me, that all does go together. But like you said, our players deserve to feel a part of that. But all college athletes since the beginning of time have deserved that. I'll never forget when they had two Heisman. I got in the biggest arguments you could ever have with donors back then. Heisman, we had two Heisman candidate running backs at San Diego State for football. Yeah. And they lived, I know where they lived. I mean, they didn't live well. They struggled. That wasn't that long ago.
Right.
Donald Pumphrey and Rashad Penny, it wasn't that long ago. But there was no NIL. And they put so many people into Qualcomm. And I'm a huge San Diego State football fan. That's my school. It's the only place I know.
I want to segue into kind of the road to Final Four, but I do want to make one more comment on this topic because I think it's so powerful. You mentioned that, you know, we'll see that the Supreme Court might come to an opinion, for example. But from a legal perspective, one of the first things you're going to have to negotiate or figure out is what body of law are we going to look to even make a decision? And that goes to fucking labor law, which goes to unionization, which goes to labor. I mean, what I'm most concerned about is, do you think, you know, unionization is going to be the answer where these guys, the players, are going to be seen as employees? Because this is what unions do. They negotiate your salary, they negotiate working conditions, and they negotiate benefits. Do you think that's where we have to go to? Would you be more comfortable with a unionized group of athletes that are employees? Is that the solution to you?
All that sounds like is compliance to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm a basketball coach, not an AD.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, where's it going to go?
I don't know. And again, as a basketball coach and not an AD, our AD is really into it. He tries to keep us on board as much as he can. Honestly, when I truly coach the guys.
Yeah, I'm here to coach.
I'm not just here to coach. Like, you're here to help them through life. If they're 18 to 22 years old. I remember myself at that time.
Yeah.
I remember him at that time. Like, 18 to 22 years old, we all need a little help at that time. Like, we all need to lean on our coaches to make sure that they can help us through these times, because you grow so. To me, there's no greater growth in life besides 18 to 22, 23 years old. 18, you're literally a child. At 23, you have to literally be a grown man. And that is truly, like, that's life in anybody's life. And you see it. In sports, it really elevates you. As a freshman, you don't know anything. As a senior, you're looking at the freshman like, how do you not know that?
Did you see growth? Let's just take the last year, because I want to get into this. This is the Final Four run. It's so special, so amazing, so exciting for you. Did you personally witness growth throughout the season? Or can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I mean, there was this one game we'll never forget. We played at Nevada, and it was like we had one of the oldest teams in the country, and it was like they were over practice, preparation, film, traveling in the Mount West. It was like we were going in that game. We all knew that shoot around was the worst we've ever had in years. It was like you knew like we were going to play bad. With that being said, when the ball goes up, that team competed. They knew like
when the lights came on.
Like they were ready. They were going to be ready. They all loved each other. They all did everything together. But it just like if they could just turn it on like that, if they could actually get to that point of like, all right, let's just lock in. We're old. We're one of the oldest in the country. I think we're like the fifth or sixth oldest team in the country. Like, let's just get 6 weeks. And like, let's just turn everything off. A lot of them turn social media off. Like, let's just lock in. And they did. And it was like this for everybody. And it was honestly one of those times, like, and I'll never forget, we had a kid that ended up transferring, but he was part of it. Like, he just wanted to graduate. He came from nothing. And he was like, man, if we could all just win, I can put myself in a position to just go get money in this NIL life that we were just talking about.
Was he talking about that at the time?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
What was it like being on that rocket ship? So you guys hadn't had tournament success. You guys had always done really, really well in the Mountain West tournament. And then come tournament time, you guys had your struggles.
It's the first time I squirmed in my seat, like, win this entire thing. I have never been more nervous in my entire life, because I knew, first of all, we had really earned that 5 seed, right? And they had chosen our 5 seed. It came down to a lot of teams. Like, we got the highest 5 seed, which means we were the closest to a 4 seed, and they sent us to Orlando, which is fine, but had we been...
Not really.
What?
not for you. Really. Yeah. Not really. It's kind of a fucked up, actually, if you ask me, but that's another subject for another time.
That team kind of needed to be away from all the stuff at home.
Yeah, it might have been a blessing.
Yeah, so we ended up going out there, but it was...
So the first game was the most nervous that you were in that tournament?
I've ever been in my life in terms of coaching a college basketball game.
You throw up or anything?
No, I never got to, like, the whole preparation. It was like every single second, every single moment leading up to that game, every practice, every play, like everything mattered. And it was literally.
Are you thinking, we got to win this fucking game?
No, and it had to go with this. And I hope you have employees like this. I'm serious. And I hope if I ever become a head coach, or when I become the head coach, that's how I should probably speak it to existence. I cared so much for Brian Dutcher to win his first one. That guy has done everything possible for this program, for this university. He's won at such a high level. We had just won the regular season. We killed it. We won it by 3 games. Mountain West Conference Tournament, we didn't even really play. Besides the first game, like, we kind of ran through that thing. Like, we literally, like, we were an unbelievable basketball team.
Not to mention getting fucked by COVID.
Yeah, and then the COVID with the 30-2. Thank you for bringing that up. I try to just think positive here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so I was super nervous because the year before that, we had blown the Creighton game. Mm-hmm. We played Creighton. I think it was a 16-point lead in the second half. So, like, it was like I just wanted him to get his first win, monkey off the back.
Sure.
And once that happens.
And that 12 was a good team.
That was a good team. They had the most wins in college basketball. Yeah,
they were good. And honestly, they were going into the fourth quarter. That was a close game.
Yeah, going right to the end of the game. And we had a kid named Micah Parrish who steps up, and out of nowhere, he hits the biggest shot of the game. And it's just like – and now we have a guy coming off the bench and stepping up and making that type of shot. And the craziest part of that is that the game before that, we saw Furman beat Virginia mm-hmm. on that wild shot.
Yeah.
And now we're like, oh, so if we went – so not only can we get Dutch this game, Furman, we know Furman, because you prepare for – once you're done with Charleston, you start moving on to next two. And so I have Charleston, then – the other two coaches, one goes to Virginia, one goes to Furman.
Got it.
Yeah. Well, the coach that's getting ready for Furman goes, you know, that guy, he coached with the Colorado State coach. They're just Colorado State. Well, we played Colorado State 3 times last year. We beat them all 3 times. They run the exact same offense. We're the number one defense in the country. We're looking at Furman like, oh, if we can get Furman.
We can
Furman,
do this.
Oh, so now we're like, we got to win this game, because if we play the next game,
we got a good
long story short, incredible game for Charleston. End up having to win in the last minute. Now we go play Furman. We win by 30. So then it's on him. And then it's on him rolling. And then now it's monkey off the back. And now it's like, now we're going to Louisville. And now you're getting, all the homies coming through. You know, now you got the Wins and the Peter Gallagher's and the Casey LeBlancs. Now you got everybody coming through.
I'm in that group?
Wait a minute.
Coach, thank you so much. You finally get him. I really appreciate it.
You just lumped me into that. God.
This is one of the best filler episodes podcasts I've ever had or witnessed. This is amazing for me. Thank you, coach.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so you get into the Sweet 16.
So get into the Sweet 16. And the Sweet 16 was you're playing Alabama. And again, we get to Alabama. And I've never talked about this. I would never talk about this publicly, but we're going to do it here on
good. Yeah, please
FYF.
Do.
A viral moment.
Yeah. Alabama, we're playing Alabama. They're the number one seed, number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
This is how the NCAA tournament, they're smart about how they do it. They put us and Virginia, the two best defensive teams, to go against Alabama. If one of us to go in the Sweet 16, that's what they wanted.
They absolutely look at that.
They want those matchups. So they're looking at Alabama. I think they're like top three in scoring, maybe number one. I know they're top three in offense. And they're looking at Virginia, San Diego State. We're all watching their stuff, but so it's Alabama. I can't find a single clip of a team that guarded Alabama the way that we guard. And so I'm getting more and more, and I keep throwing on games. And I keep telling our guys, nobody's guarded them like us. Nobody has guarded them like us. Like, nobody. The first three games, the first three possessions after they ran a special play was perfect. They could have ran that play all game. I shouldn't say that. They could play them again this NCAA tournament. They ran a perfect play. The first play of the game was an awesome play. The next three plays down where it's just like free-flowing, where it's like not the coaches drawing something up on the whiteboard. They couldn't even get a shot off. And I'm like, oh, boy.
But when they get off the bus, they look like an NBA team. There's a question with that, because I was there that game, and you're like,
I was going to say, explain to me. No. What's the difference, coach?
I know you got your guys back. I'm not listening to that bullshit. You could just tell these guys.
They look like an NBA training camp.
You mean swagger demeanor?
No. He's talking about length.
Arm length. And by the way, they're bouncy. They just jump through the roof. Fair. These guys are 6'9".
They have 3 7-footers.
Fair.
And they look athletic.
They could probably compete.
By the way, their women's softball team is probably the most athletic. Yeah. If you go to Alabama, check a lot of boxes athletically.
Absolutely.
But what I'm saying is in playing sports, oftentimes when you see something like that, right? The guys are just bigger. They're it could get into your head. They're the number one seed in the whole tournament. Do your guys have no shock and awe at all? You guys are prepared. Are you guys even? Do you guys talk about athletic? Like athletically, these guys can do this or that.
No,
or nothing. Just nothing. It's all scheme. It's all schematic.
It's schematic. It's togetherness. It's connectivity. It's all the things that that's what we do at San Diego State. And that's, again, that goes so back far. We joke about it all the time. Every time you see Kansas on the road and they talk about, Kansas on TV.
Yeah.
We've been there once. We won. That's kind of like the attitude.
Are you watching for that though? Like in pregame, are you guys looking at the eyes of your players and seeing, hey, where's their mental state?
Yeah, no, there is times you have seen. I'm not going to say we've never seen it before. The times you really look at it though is the teams like last night. You know, you play the teams that are supposed to be lesser than you or not as strong.
Worried about
teams.
Playing down to them.
Yeah, you got it. You don't the other teams. If you're at a place like San Diego, right. They're fired up. And honestly,
that's a great point.
They want to show the world like, oh, they get all that love. I'm better than them.
So it can also go the opposite direction. What I mean by that is you're playing Alabama. People get too juiced up.
Oh, absolutely. So how do
you?
Time.
So and are you in Dutch? In a situation like that, where you're like, man, we're not getting the right shot.
The coach.
We're not playing. We're too excited. Are you calling a timeout in a situation like that? Do you ever where you would sacrifice maybe strategy just to get people to calm the fuck down?
Yeah,
like nerve watch.
Yeah, you got to nerve watch sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, we nerve watch the Charleston game. Okay. Our two point guards who are still with us, thankfully. But it literally looked like they couldn't dribble the ball at the beginning of the game.
It was just nerves.
And it was nerves, and they felt like the ball was too bouncy. And it was honestly like they were just looking for an out, like of like they knew what it was. They knew the pressure of the moment. And so, you take a time out.
I want to talk a little bit about the tournament in again, I think it was Final Four.
I don't remember if it was
Sweet 16.
Keep going.
But where you're 4 feet under the court. And there's a challenge.
There's a challenge to coaching
that nobody's talked about. It was the first time. You're like, you feel like you're in shackles.
A player can fall.
There's your shackles. Can you talk about coaching in that environment?
Yeah. So we played at NRG Stadium where the Houston Texans play. And it was unbelievable just to walk in there on the first day. You get to go there. So you get there super early. So you play Saturday, Monday. You get there Tuesday, you land in Houston. You practice Wednesday. Is just your closed, no one's there. That's your one time to go in there and, like, take your time. It's like everybody gets, like, 2 hours of four teams. And then Thursday's open where it's, like, there's 60,000 just – it's open for the student – I mean, not students, but all the kids in Houston, Texas get to go to the game – go to go to open practice. It's, like, 45 minutes. You know, I was mic'd up, and so there's a million TV people. It's televised. It's not real practice. So you don't really – you know what I mean? But you get to feel what it feels like with people in there. Then Friday's just in like an hour quick shoot around type thing, and then Saturday you play. But on Wednesday when we first walked in there, I was like, man, this is no big deal. Like you're there and you're on the stage. I'm like, and the guys are like, man, they're shooting really well. Yeah. I'm like, man, I always heard the Final Four was like, this is like really hard to shoot in a Final Four stadium. And they're like, no, this one's different because it's so dark. Everywhere is so dark. In Houston's, it's dark. Other ones, it's so light. Cowboy Stadium's like there's so many windows. Houston, there's no windows. Incredibly dark stadium. So it's like a focus. It doesn't feel like it's a bad backdrop.
Interesting.
Well, what I didn't do was go sit where I was going to sit for the game this entire time is what I'm getting at. So the game starts on Saturday.
I don't know
if you guys have ever seen me coach, but I never sit down.
Well, we've watched you on TV.
The refs tell me to sit down all game. The head coach stands up, but I have a certain energy about me where I have to always be on my feet and yelling and doing my thing. And I really felt like the Florida Atlanta game was affected. I could not feel like I could reach our guys because you're literally in a dugout.
Now, do you mean energy or literally talk to them?
Communicate. I mean, literally like.
You feel like you're 4 foot two. Just
yeah.
Like,
4 foot
you
two.
You feel like Casey does every day. you set yourself up.
Yeah, I really did.
You honestly feel like, oh, hey, like, hey, guys. Like,
hey, you guys.
Hey, over here. Over here.
Even the officials, like, he's like 10 feet tall. Yeah. You're just like down here. He's way up there. And you're like, hey, bud. That was a bad call.
You want to throw a flag?
It's ridiculous. And I had a friend named Joey Lima. I don't know if you guys know him. After the Florida Atlantic game, they said, "Coach, You didn't coach tonight. That's why you guys almost lost. And I said, it felt like I didn't coach.
Yeah.
National championship game, UConn. I put my knee on that floor the entire time. I never sat in that dugout one time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It was, but again, it was the most amazing experience, and it's something why I haven't left San Diego State was for that moment. It's I've been fortunate to be offered other spots and go other places. But for what San Diego, what that meant to this city, the greatest city in the world. I know where we all grew up.
I believe that, actually.
It's the greatest city in the world to me. Not America, the world. This city, this community, this university, San Diego State, they deserved it. They all came out to Houston. That moment for my family, my friends, you, for everybody to be there. I could still cry about it to this day. I know we didn't get the job done. We'll be back someday. But to just have that moment, that experience, it was incredibly well-earned with incredibly young, amazing individuals. One of them's already in the NBA. There'll be more that were on that team that nobody expected to be in the NBA. There might not be any draft picks that were on that team, but they'll find a way to make the roster. To overachieve, because that's exactly what they're all about. They're about everything that we all stand for as human beings, high-character young men, and just like it was like the perfect storm, and I'm so happy that I would love for Coach Fisher did it three times in Michigan.
Yeah.
And so he got to celebrate and cut down a net one time in 1999 with Dutch. But for Dutch to do it, and like we talked about 10 minutes ago, for him just to – I was hoping for him just to win one game against Charleston.
Yeah.
But for him to coach in a national championship game three weeks later from that is unbelievable.
Can you talk – I was lucky enough, and I don't know if it's maybe on YouTube or not, but I was lucky enough to see the speech that he gave after that UConn game. I thought it was one of his best moments.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about being there, what that speech was, and for those that haven't seen it, and then what it meant to you and the team in that given time?
It's true leadership. It's like the definition of leadership. It's about really how proud someone could be of a group of individuals and a team, but also just about how much bigger it is of themselves. It's just what that group of the sacrifices they made for this, again, moment. This community, this moment, this, but everything and everybody that was involved. I mean, again, it wasn't the university. It was so many different people and so many, you know, different aspects of this universe of San Diego that were a part of it, all the alumni. And then again, personally, our family and friends, you. And again, like I said, everybody, like they put in so much time and effort, and we never talked about it before that. He never talks like that. He's not a very emotional leader in that way. That's not how he does it. And for him in that moment to have that speech and to hit on all that, on all those points. And my favorite part of that speech is that he didn't know he gave that speech until he heard it the day you heard it.
Wow.
He said, I did not know that's what I said.
He tied it up in such a way. It's available for people to see.
Yeah.
You have to go. Anyone who's listening to this, immediately after you subscribe to the station, go watch that speech. You could watch that speech if you know nothing about basketball.
I'm getting goosebumps. I don't even know what he's talking about.
It is a speech. It is like a Lou Holtz speech from Notre Dame in the 80s. Because it's a moment in time where you have to remember – these guys just lost the national championship, so it's heartbreaking. But you have to take him to the point of getting to the national championship. Yeah. So he ties it all into, he understands the moment in such a way where you're like, I wasn't there. I mean, I was there, but I'm not in that locker room where you feel like you're part of the team. Yeah. When you're from San Diego, you have this pride where he's not just speaking to the team. He's speaking to the community, Southern California, to everyone who gave them time and energy into the program. It was pretty incredible.
It was amazing.
What were you thinking right then? Because if he didn't remember it, where were you at listening to it or even looking back after you saw it again? Walk me through you personally.
I mean, you guys know me. I'm emotional. You know, I was heartbroken.
Yes, you are.
I could cry again. I mean, I'm emotional. I'm emotional for our players more than anything else. I think our players deserve to have that final moment. Why not?
Yeah.
We made it that far. Like, UConn, great. They earned it. They beat us, and that's what Dutch talked about. Like, all right, if someone's going to beat us, they're going to beat us. But for me personally, I think that was an amazing moment. But for our players, I wish that they got that one more moment.
Yeah.
Well listen.
We got a couple more. Quick things.
Yeah.
So we talked about this year. We talked about some of the coaching philosophies that you have. We talked about an incredible Final Four national championship run. Let's talk about Dave Velasquez.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
That's so yeah, we'll end up wrapping
after.
Because this is most of the time you're talking about the team, you're talking about the year immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm always, because we obviously are, we're much more than just, you know, just buddies. We're friends and we've gone through a journey together. And so I'm curious, as you look at your career at San Diego State, where you're at today, where do you want to go with this?
I want to make San Diego State, I want to be the Brian Dutcher of San Diego State someday. And I say that only in this, and I mean this truly. I, right now, I would love and appreciate all the opportunities that are coming my way, and I feel like they're deserved. But right now, it just feels like it'd be hard to wear a different logo on my chest. I feel like if I was to go to bed at night, as of today, not my change tomorrow, as of today, that's something that means so much to me. And I know it won't ever go away, but that part of me is hard for me to really buy into something else. Because again, it's something that when you care so much about something, the same way you care about New Venture Escrow at a level that you do, you can't just walk away from something.
And you can't turn it on and off.
You can't turn it on and off.
And
I wish I could.
DNA.
I wish I could be like so many of these other coaches that
play the game.
They play the game and they're so good at it. I'm not that way. That's not the type of person I am. And, you know, and honestly, a lot of it due to you, I've gotten better just being a leader, being at San Diego State, being happy with who I am. I think that's important to be okay in your own skin.
Yeah.
I felt like I was terrible 6 years ago, to be honest. And I apologize to some of our former players I had. Like, I wish you got the new me. Mm-hmm. Like, not the me at 33, 34.
The evolved me,
I should say. That now I look back at myself, and I wasn't bad by any means, but I'm nowhere near as good as I am today.
We're going to keep going on that, but what's the main thing? What's the main difference?
The absolute care for how they are over yourself. Like, the true care of that person, not basketball-wise every day. I've always been great basketball-wise in terms of, you know, let's get you in the gym to do this, or let's do this. But like, literally, how are you doing? And that sounds so simple, so easy to say.
It's not.
You really got to feel.
That's not simple at all.
And during that time.
Because you can ask it, but you have to mean it.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, it really started when I had my first child.
Yeah.
And then you have your second. But then when COVID hits, and then you really spend time with the people that you really mean the most to you. And you really have to have these kind of deep conversations, and basketball is taken away from you. Yeah. Like I said, sixth grade, wanted to coach. I've never had basketball taken away from me.
And at that point, that was the best team you'd ever coached.
Ever coached. Yeah. And they all got taken away from me. My favorite player, and Malachi was the one that is my favorite one to coach. Yeah. But I had a guy on that team that is a truly family member named Yanni Wetzel, who's to this day, he stays in my house. Like, I was coaching a player on that team that, like, I never wanted to not coach. And he'll be family forever. He left. He couldn't be in the States anymore. He had to go back to New Zealand.
Coach,
I
got to tell you, there's a lot of people that define love as placing that person's needs over your own.
Yeah.
That's a universal definition of love. I think that's what you're speaking about, and Absolutely. That's quite a powerful thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It changed, and it's changed over the last 5-6 years, to be honest with you. It has nothing to do with our success. I hope has something to do with it, but that didn't happen because of our success. It's happened because of just, again, like you said, the evolved version of self.
Yeah. Sure.
So 5 years from now, you're going to be the head coach of San Diego State. We're making a proclamation
let's
now.
Let's just knock on lots of wood.
Yeah.
Or, you know what? If Dutch wants to keep going, keep going.
Dutch, I know you're going to listen to this. And Dutch, if you want it to be three, that's fine. Hey, listen, you have a beautiful family. You have grandkids now. And let's just make sure we get Dave into the head spot. But listen, let's just call it five for argument's sake.
That is a shameless plug, but go ahead.
Yeah, of course. No, it's not shameless. Yes, it's
shameful.
Fully shameful. All right, so 5 years from now, you're the head coach. NIL has been refined.
Yeah.
What are the things that you're going to do exactly the same?
Yep.
What are some of the things that you're not sure about? And what are some of the things that you're saying, you know what, fucking, we're pivoting. We're going to do something completely different.
Oh, wow, that's hard. Number one is the culture and the standard will not change. That's just so silly and dumb to do. If you're at the level of success that we've had, it's the same thing that Dutcher did with Coach Fisher. We're going to defend at a high level. We're going to defensive rebound and win championships. It's not coach cliche. It's one. Going to Viejas, see the banners. We're not going away from that. So that's for sure. We're going to care about the guys first. And we're not going to start recruiting every McDonald's All-American or every best player we can get and not care about character. You have to have the right guys in your program.
That's great.
So that's not going to change. Absolutely not. The second thing, and what am I not sure about?
Yeah, what are some things
I'm not sure if I'm going to pivot away from the type of players we recruit in terms of is it going to be athletes or is it all skill or mix or, you know, I've seen Coach Dutcher kind of.
You mean the distinction between a player versus athlete?
Yeah, just in terms of like, because you watch guys and like, what do you value most? There's a lot of programs that like, they don't really care in the length, athleticism, can they switch 1 through 5 ball screens? Can they guard a point guard and a center?
Yeah.
Like some guys don't care about that. Our program, you better be able to do all 5 or you can't play here. It just is one of those things.
Yeah.
And so do we pivot away from that to be a stronger offensive team?
And then that would be shocking from you. That's just
not my DNA. So
that would be shocking. Yeah. But thank you for answering the question. Yeah. All right. So then is there something where as a head coach,
and I don't know if I can get this done, but I'm at a different period in my life compared to Coach Dutch, who's 65. I'm 40. So if you're saying 5 years from now, I'm 45. I still feel like I really connect with these guys. Now, yeah, we do a lot of times listen to the same music. We don't have necessarily the same interest in clothes and some of that stuff, shoes at times we do. But I feel like we can just spend a lot more time away from the gym, away from school, more than we do as a team right now. And I think that's just a little thing.
Yeah.
But I think it could become a big thing.
It's great.
And as a young coach, yeah, I think we could have more.
I think a lot of pro teams can learn a lot about that too.
I just think we could spend more time together. And I don't want it to be forced fun either though. You know, I know it's already a grind. I know we spend a lot of time in the gym together. I know the sweat equity that we build together is incredible. That's why we win. I know all that. I know the film and all that. We spend a ton of time together. I don't want it to be forced fun. I don't want it to be, oh, man, we got to go to Coach Dave's house again. Oh, why are we going to do that? I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be fun.
Organic.
I want it to be organic, and I want it to be somewhere that they can come and feel comfortable, bring their girlfriends, whoever it might be, and just find a place to hang out. And I think that's something that, you know, again, Coach Fisher, he was kind of older too, so every time he went to his house, he was always like one of those. He was always super nice, super generous. Every time you go to Coach Dutch's house, it's super nice. It's awesome. We always have a good time, but it's like 2, 3, 4 times a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like something that we do all the time. I would hope if I'm the head coach at to me, a younger age than them, not at a very young age at that point, 45, but at a younger age, I hope that we could be more of a, you know, we have a cornhole
family,
a continued cornhole tournament, ping pong tournament throughout the year, something like that. Those are the things that go through my mind.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, that's a great spot for us to wrap. I want to thank you for your time today.
Yes.
It is your day off, and you've been gracious enough with your time
to let us. I love you both very much. I love you more, but yes, I love you both very much.
That's the easiest decision you've ever made. It's the easiest coaching decision you've ever made.
Oh, listen, thank you very much, Coach. Coach, just so you know, audience, gentlemen, ladies, everybody, you can download us on any platform, like us, talk to us. We love comments. It's been actually really fun to listen to people wanting to know more about certain things. We're happy to talk to our guests offline and ask them those questions. So continue to enjoy us. We deliver to you. Again, thank you for the time, and that's it. That's a wrap.
Thank you.